What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Hello. Happy Monday, friends, listeners.
I hope the week's off to a happy start.
What are we talking about today?
A juicy question, an impossible question. At least it has felt impossible to us. No right or wrong answers. There might be some wrong answers, but I don't think there's a perfectly right answer. The question is, how much do we share about our kids, or how do we share about our kids? And thinking about that, I mean, it's in the forefront of our minds with this podcast. You know, we're talking about parenting. You can't parent without a child as part of that picture. And so how do we represent our kids within that? But also just you and I are both content creators, I guess. That feels like a weird title to claim. But people who represent our lives online, and that's part of our work, self-narrating, and parenting is a big part of our lives. So how do we do that? But then also just in the great wide world of parenting and how we share about our kids, represent our kids, how we hold our stories as separate. I think about that a lot in my writing, in future books or essays as I've written about this experience, which has been a massive one, but it involves another person in a really intimate way. So how do we navigate that? How do we think about that? Is that the question? Are there things you would add to it?
That is the question. It feels like we're trying to establish the container or the rules of engagement for how we want to guide our conversations on the podcast. And it feels a little bit about Instagram and images and faces. And I've also been thinking about how do I share about family, extended family. Our stories are always tied up in other people's stories. And so how do we tell ours while honoring and respecting and giving dignity to the people whose story probably is different for them. Rebecca, can we talk about your essay for a second that you just dropped, The Son of a Disabled Woman?
Yeah.
Reading that, the part where you were saying like that his story can be different from yours, like you both have a different story about what it is, about what disability plays in your life. And that's something that I've been grappling with in separate ways, but there's been times in my life where I have been to some people a hero and to some people a villain, and letting those things be true and separate from my story, that someone else's experience of an interaction of us, their experience is real and what happened for them is really real. And my experience, what happened for me, is also real, and that those don't cancel or negate each other. That's maybe like pulling it further than what this intended conversation is, but that those feel like the broader conversation.
Well, it's really interesting to hear what came up for you in reading that essay, because I do think the heart of it is opening ourselves up to the reality that two people can go through the same thing, right? They're both witnessing, they're in the same moment. They're breathing the same air, and then their experiences of that can be wildly different and both true. And I think that that's not a muscle that most of us have built up to be able to like hold on to all of that. And I also think that there can be something really painful about that. And maybe not always, but in my experience of that, there's some kind of pain in that separation or that difference. And I don't know if it's just the need for us to see it the same way. Like I just have this desire for us to see it the same way. But I think in particular, when I think about my experiences of that, where like you are sharing a life space with someone and your interpretations of what happened or why it happened or how to feel about it are in not some kind of opposition. I think that I feel the pain of the difference of that most acutely in my experience as a daughter and my experience as a mother. I don't know if that's true for other people.
We just assume such alignment in like parents and children that their stories would be the same. So when I was pregnant, I started an Instagram account called Operation Tiny Human. And it was kind of this like journal entry space for me to document pregnancy. And then when Charlie was born, it continued that. And I stopped when he was a year old is when I stopped doing that. And this feels connected to that string metaphor. We're in the beginning, like our bodies are literally connected. His body was inside of my body when he came out. We were still connected by an umbilical cord. And for months and months, his existence relied on like my body was sustaining his body in many ways, but like he couldn't have lived or functioned without me or another caregiver directly with him. And so in those ways, our stories were so, so parallel and the strings were so attached. And as he gets older, the space between them grows, the like stretchiness of the strings, our interpretation of moments really changes. I just keep watching him become more and more autonomous, more separate from me. When he was born, it was like we are in so many ways the same being. It just, to me, it felt like there was very little separation between his body and mine. And it's just been this sometimes really painful, sometimes beautiful, stretching, expanding, differentiating of us as people. And in that, I think the way that I tell our stories is shifting. And now he's four, and it is like, oh my God, you have so many, he has so many stories about what his life and existence are. And they're really different from mine, even when we're in the same moment. And mostly that, I think it's really magical and cool that suddenly he is able to verbalize to me how he is seeing and experiencing the world. But that means I don't get to tell his story as though it's mine, because those are not the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, as they get older, they just spend more time experiencing things that we are not even there to witness. That was a really strange, strange, uncomfortable, and still there's an ache in that. You are building a sense of yourself in some ways in these moments that I'm not even there for. And I want to be there for like every moment. And also, I think there's something good for you that I'm not. Okay, so as you find yourself separating or like feeling the space between you and his stories are different than your stories, how is that shifting the way that you represent him or talk about him or share about him?
I've been really struck lately about the stories that people tell that everyone thinks are funny or cute about kids. And actually, when I look at them, they feel kind of embarrassing, or like we wouldn't tell those kind of stories about adults. Our friends, they would be like sweet things that we would share together or only share in like really close friend settings. So that's just something I've been noticing in like the greater space and noticing that I feel really uncomfortable about it. And I definitely am not perfect at this. I'm sure I share so many things about him that maybe I shouldn't, but trying to consider it like if that story was an adult, would I be sharing that so openly? Would that be mine to share? Would it be his? I think there's just so many funny things as they're like potty training and learning to put clothes on and saying things, and it's hilarious. And there's so many little mishaps and it is funny, but it feels funny in an endearing way. And also that is his whole world and it's not a joke for him. Like it's his whole real experience. That was a muddled way to answer.
Yeah, I think that we're creating containers. That's one side of the container that you're mindful of.
Yeah, that he is an entire person and he is not less or undeveloped amount of a human. Like he is a full human and everything that he's experiencing is so real. And just because adults have experienced more or different or like have a different context, I feel like sometimes we negate the experience of children because we're like, oh, haha, this thing. And I'm like, no, you're probably in 20 years are going to be spending a lot of money in therapy processing that thing. That's really important. The more that I have spent time in therapy and processed childhood, the more I'm like, this is not a joke. This is not funny. This is not like a little anecdote to share in like my Facebook profile. This is his whole experience right now, and it will matter.
I wonder if some things are like a joke. Some things maybe will feel funny, but like, it's like, who gets to decide that? And if he wants to tell us like some story when he grows up, that's silly. Like, that feels different than like us laughing. I mean, how many times does Charlie say, that's not funny, stop laughing? Otto says that a lot to us, even just in our own home when it's just like the three of us. And he'll say something that's funny that we'll laugh at. And Otto is like adamant that it is not.
We haven't had that a lot. Yeah, he hasn't seemed like a kid who is like easily embarrassed.
Yeah. Oh, okay. My kid is. And there I am sharing that detail about him. So like, what is the line? But you know, one thing that was really clarifying, or like a moment with Otto that I come back to a lot when I'm trying to figure out the edges of this container or how to think about it. Yeah, Otto is beautifully passionate and sometimes like comes across as a dramatic kid. And he was doing this really dramatic, impassioned dance to Spooky Scary Skeletons in the living room. And I pulled out my phone and I had enough wherewithal to say, like, is it okay if I take a video of you? And he was like 3 years old, maybe 2.5. And he said, no. And the reason he gave was like, I want this to just be for myself. And I was like, oh, what deep clarity you just offered me of like, I just want to be in this moment or not have to think about an audience or someone watching me right now or later. Like, I just want to be able to be in the moment of this dance. That comes up a lot for me throughout an ordinary day when I like pull out my phone to take a picture of something. I just feel very conscious of creating a sense that of audience. I don't want him to feel like every moment that there might be somebody watching it or watching it later or looking back on it, that he just can be in a moment and just be present in it and not think about anything else feels important to me and tricky because I do take videos of him. We do have a lot of pictures on our phone.
Well, and I think that he's going to want that in the future, right? So the difference between like capturing it and sharing it feels really different. So I recently stopped sharing, which I've like then broke around his birthday, but recently stopped sharing his face on Instagram. And I realized I stopped taking videos and photos. So much of my work and the way that I process stuff is sharing on the internet. And there's like layers to that. But I've had to like reteach myself to keep capturing the moments because we're going to want those later.
I mean, it's just for you, not.
And it's just for me. I have definitely had to rethink that. And this is so like logistical and nitty gritty, but I mindfully take, if I'm like, oh, this is a moment I want to document, share about how I can capture it without showing faces, with like, I'm getting the moment and the essence, but not taking too much of him, but then also capturing the moment with all of him in it so that we can have that in a different way later. So I've been kind of like splitting my brain in terms of how I document stuff.
Well, and part of what went into your choice to do that, do you want to talk a little bit about?
Yeah. So the reason I stopped sharing him was I had like a series of interactions at playgrounds where people recognized me because they recognized him. And they came up and said hello. And they were all very sweet, benign encounters. And people were just saying really nice things about the work that I make. But it still felt unsettling because I was like, the world is not always kind. And this could easily feel sinister. So I pulled back. I realized I also listened to, I don't remember what podcast, I'll try and find it. But they were saying there's a high chance that they will regret sharing their kid on the internet in the future, but they're not going to regret not sharing them. You know, I will regret not taking photos and videos of him to have in the future, but I'm not going to regret not sharing them on the internet. Like, that's not a thing that I can imagine myself. But there is a world in which I could really regret sharing too much. And so I've been trying to pull back. And also, it's hard because I tell stories and I process the world through my daily life, and he is a huge part of it. So yeah, I'm trying to figure out what that balance is. And why do we want to share? And for me, I, as this like Midwest evangelical, like closeted queer kid in my like early 20s, and even now, like I found my people on the internet. Like I found permission. I found people who looked like me who are moving through the world in ways that I wanted to. And now people are messaging me and saying that I'm doing that for them. And so that feels really, really important and special. And it's just like part of my art practice is sharing my experience of being a human in the world, in this body, in this way.
And a huge part of that experience and what you're embodying these days is being Charlie's parent. And the ways that you have captured that experience, I mean, we've talked about the way that you represented the strings and that image that you gave. I cannot imagine that I'm the only one who felt like that was incredibly grounding, like image to grab a hold of, to understand some of the feelings, those strings stretching and becoming flexible or breaking. But also there's that image that you made. Is it says, am I a real mom on it? I don't know. I remember like seeing it first online, and then I got to see it in person at the gallery in St. Louis. And there's something about the way that that actual illustration that felt like it was like actually an illustration of my soul, not my external shell, but like getting at the soul of this feeling. And then also Charlie is a part of that drawing, right? Which feels like, I don't know, how do you feel about that kind of sharing? So not like telling a story or a picture about Charlie, but sharing something that Charlie created.
So the way that I have been making work for the past few years in collaboration with Charlie is I give him, he has like full access to all of my nice paper. I just leave stacks of paper around and he'll scribble and make marks and then discard it. And at this point, he has shown no like feelings of ownership. I know some kids feel really precious about their drawings. It's not a way that he has indicated. And I've asked him, I always ask permission if I can draw on top of it. And often we'll draw together at the same time on the same piece. And so that feels really great to me. I love that way of showing his hand in my work. He feels really proud of it, like when he's seen it shared. And in that piece, like I'm writing a lot about myself and my experience of parenting or mothering. And that feels totally good to me. That is my story of this experience. And to me, it barely implicates him. I really hope that his experience of these fears that I have is very different from mine. I hope that he tells a really different story and that he's able to look back and understand the complexity. I write a lot about the joy and how delighted I am to be here, and also how scary and hard and impossible all of it is. And I hope that what he's feeling is overwhelmingly like love and care. But as someone who was raised by a parent with mental illness, I am distinctly aware of the fact that he will be impacted by my depression, my anxiety. And the way that I'm approaching that is to just be as like open and honest about it as I can and never use it as an excuse to be an asshole.
Ooh, that piece reminds me of my essay, Caitlin, of that piece of like, I mean, that gets to the heart of, I mean, it's different, but that's how I feel with physical disability. I don't think that I really felt the sharp edge of the possibility that any part of me, my physical disability or any part of me would have some kind of impact on Otto that is not like pure goodness and ease and joy, that there would be some part of me that would cause him any kind of pain or loss or frustration is incredibly hard to just sit with. And I think that that practice that we're talking about, it feels so vulnerable and brave and right to open up myself, open up my arms to say, you have full permission to tell what your experience of me is. I have a strong impulse to control what that narrative is because I feel like it really matters and there's high stakes and there's already so much stigma around disability and parenting that it's like important that we get this quote unquote right. And I think it feels equally important that he feel free and empowered to tell his story of that experience. And I think if I'm being the bravest, most honest version of myself, I have to acknowledge that that could be a complicated story. I think that if I'm thinking about my own experience of being parented, I think I learned, I don't know how, if every kid would be the same, I'm sure they wouldn't, but I feel like I learned really early what story my parents, my mom was telling. And I learned how to tell that story. I feel really cautious and careful in how I talk about this. And that goes back to like, how do you represent other people's stories? And how do you like tell your own story when it's so woven together with another person's story, like a parent? But I was growing up in the late 80s, early 90s. So there was no Instagram to post any stories on, but my mom is definitely a storyteller. And our version of that was traveling around to schools and churches telling the story of my cancer and like childhood illness. And so the story that my mom was telling was that like God had saved my life from cancer in part because he could use me to show his power in the joy that I had that transcended my reality. Like if this disabled child in this wheelchair can have joy, that's supernatural. And so you can also have joy, audience, you know, like that kind of mindset, that my life was like evidence of God's power and to sustain us in suffering. Maybe I know that definitely my mom would say that the way that my mom talks about it now is that she could not have survived that time without God, is how she would tell that story. And I can't imagine what kind of tools I would use to survive my kid having cancer and going through surgeries and expecting him to die. I cannot imagine what tools I would reach for or how I would survive that. If I could, I mean, it just sounds like a nightmare that knows no bottom to it. But that story became the story for both of us. And I learned really quickly what kind of little tidbits I could pull and who I could be so that we could really tell that story well and have little anecdotes to like sprinkle into our talks and stuff. So I like learned to play that part. I think in hindsight, there was a time when I was very, very angry and bitter about that because it, in a lot of ways, I learned to sort of disconnect from my own experience and just like fit into somebody else's narrative and play a part. And there was no space to acknowledge the suffering or anger or pain that I did experience in the midst of all of that. And so I feel like that contributed to some harmful patterns in my brain. However, I think as time goes on and I have more distance from that and more life experience, it is easier for me to see that I think my mom felt like in telling that story, it was a helpful, good story. It's like a framework that helped her. And like, why would I not want to give my kid that? Why would I not want to share this good way, this helpful, sturdy way of moving through life? Why would I not want to also share that with my kid? And so I think that observing that from a distance, knowing some of the sharp edges of it, and knowing also the impulse you have as a parent and what you want to offer and give your kid, I see a lot of complication and how to do this. And I think one of the things that I've taken away is to feel really, really cautious about putting a narrative on top of him, even a narrative that I think is good, you know, even something that has been helpful for me. The way I think about disability as, you know, a both and experience that comes with limitation that leads to creativity, or that like disability can come with these assets and, you know, we move through the world in a different way, but it's a beautiful way, like oversimplified way of describing how I see disability and parenting. But I want to be really careful to let Otto have all the breathing room, that he doesn't ever feel like he needs to play a character in that story for me, or like become evidence that my framework is true or good.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying, so the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
Another piece of it, and we've kind of been dancing around this in our conversation, but I think about what it's like to center your own perspective and story, your own experience in a story, without forcing your child into any specific part in that story. And that's what I see in your Am I a Real Mom drawing, that you are like centering your experience. It's interesting for me to think back on like, what would it have been like for my mom to focus on her story in this? And I think in some ways she did. She kind of moved in and out of that and they wove together. But what would it be like to tell a story from your specific point of view and allow the other people, characters in that story, to not be pinned down to any one thing, even if you feel like you have a pretty good handle on who they are or how they feel about that story? Because I think one of the things that's complicated about representing or telling stories that involve relationships or other people is that relationships and people change, perspectives change. And so pinning someone else down, even pinning ourselves down to one thing, is tricky. All of that is what makes it messy. And also, those are some clarifying edges for me. As much as I can center my own experience of this, what I am processing or seeing or how I am changing as a person, and letting you, child or mother or whoever else I'm representing, I'm not pinning you down to any one thing or claiming to know how you experience a thing or who you are because of what I saw.
Yeah, I feel like on the surface, this conversation is like, what do we share on the internet? What do we say on our podcast? And really, it's about how do we tell stories well? How do we make space?
And you know what else it is? I feel like it's also, not to get too grandiose, but I think it's also like, how do we be with people? And how do we be in relationship with people? It kind of reminds me of like what Dr. Becky says in Good Inside, with like thinking about what is the most generous interpretation of what I'm seeing. That way of being with people where we recognize the limitations of our capacity to understand their perspective and experience of something, and not pinning them down to a rigid narrative. Well, not that we can't have feelings or reactions to people, but like in the big scope of it, acknowledging that people are not easily understood or pinned down, that people change, that perspective's hard to understand.
So I think often there's like, try and understand someone else's point of view and then like take that one on as true. And I think that's a disservice to your own experience. The richness here is being able to say, I see your experience. I see how real and true that is for you and why you would make those decisions. And also the way that I feel about that and what my experience was is just as true and real. And I think that's the hardest thing because it's unresolved. You can't tie that up with a bow. My 20s was this like angsty, like rejecting things that hurt me and moving away and being like, I am my own identity. And I don't know how else to have moved through that except for to do that. And there was a lot of rage and anger and cutting people off and just, and now I feel like my 30s are this like messy, messy untangling where nothing is clear and we're all a hero and we're all a villain and we're all the main character and we're all supporting. I can be like, that was fucked up. That was wrong. That hurt me. You hurt these people. Like, I would not have made those choices. This is bad, bad, bad. I have anger and rage. And also I can look with compassion and be like, I see where you were harmed. I see where you might have made that decision. I see that perhaps you were doing the best with what you had at the time. And I can still feel rage. I can feel anger. I can feel disappointment. I can even have a pass a judgment, like think this is my belief system about this thing that you did or how your life moved, while also being like, that is separate from your experience and what you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be clear, I have definitely have relationships in my life where I would say, I mean, you can acknowledge somebody else's reality and also realize like, oh, the relationship that we have only causes me harm. So I'm not going to seek that out. I'm not going to try to be close to you. Similarly, Caitlin, like, I think I definitely had this childhood where I accepted every narrative that was put on me. And then this sort of like explosive ripping up of that narrative and being like, this doesn't fit. This doesn't work. And then like, almost like the pendulum swinging in the totally opposite direction. Yeah, it's like this coming back to some kind of middle that just acknowledges other people's realities as being different than mine, not so that I can adopt their reality or so that I can definitely be close to them again, but just recognizing the complexity of what life feels like from a particular set of life experiences and how different that can be from mine.
And I think it's so much tidier to be like, we all just have to agree on one reality. That feels so much tidier and safer. And also that is so flat. It feels like we'll just continually be unfinished and raw around the edges. And also, I think it's the truest, most honest way to live.
You know what else has helped me, I think, in figuring out some of those tricky relationships? I wonder if this is ever anything that you practiced, but I think maybe, okay, if we're going back to this model of like in my 20s, it was like, you are not who I needed you to be or not who I need you to be. And therefore, I don't know, like kind of like a black and white way of thinking about it. Like either you need to be exactly what I need you to be, or you can't be anything at all. And I think for me, like recognizing like, oh, this is what you have to offer in this relationship. And this is what you don't have to offer. And if I can accept that and take in that beautiful thing that you do have to offer and not expect the other thing and let that be what it is, I don't know, that has helped me rest into something that feels a little bit more nuanced and honest and possible.
Feels like a level of self-reliance, like this, the needing the stories to all align. Not that we don't always continually need each other, but I think like you need someone else. You need them all to align to be okay. And to be able to say, no, I am okay and I am steady and I can stand over here and I can hold this as real and you can be that as real and I am self-contained, which I feel it comes back to parenting for me in a lot of ways. I think when you're pregnant or like when you're working towards getting a child, however that comes to you, it is all consuming. And then this child comes and they require so much. Everything in your world revolves around them. And it can feel like a loss of identity. And then you start to rebuild that, but that identity is so tied to them. It's like there's no disconnection. And I certainly felt that. And I think
this is making sense to me, what you're saying, by the way.
Okay, good. I want Charlie, I want to be able to watch him grow and expand beyond me with joy. I don't want my sense of self, my stability, my presence to be contingent upon him, because that is an enormous weight for him to carry. And also, it is a road paved. There's only a future of grief in that, because he and I will only continue to separate. Even if we retain beautiful, healthy relationship, we will continually separate into other spaces. And the thing that I have come to believe is that the greatest gift I can give to him and to myself is for parent to be only one of a wide range of identities and ways that I find value and worth. I can't speak to how that will be true for him, but for me, and parenting is such a still an all-consuming huge piece of my world, but prioritizing things outside of him and for him to see me in other roles and identities, and for me to speak about parenting in the ways that are my experience of this and not him, which feels very messy. That part still feels confusing. I don't know how to parse these apart. But I feel like that's what I'm trying to do with this podcast and the work that I'm making about us. Cause everything feels like it's about him or my relationship to him and parenting and how to make that separate from him. I think it's still something that I'm processing so much that I don't entirely know what I'm getting at. The only thing I do know is that I want to be a multitude of things, and for Charlie to see that, and I want to speak of my experience with him as my experience and leave space for him to have his experience, where my tale of parenting and mothering doesn't necessarily need to be even a direct story about him. Because so much of it is an internal thing just about me. And also there's a whole thing about us. But I think that's the part that I want to hold sacred and precious and carefully as I share my story and try and understand and grapple with things publicly.
Yeah, all of it, it feels like so much of it comes back to like, how do you stay connected and separate? It's like a constant balancing act, or like, I don't know, like a garden you have to weed every other morning or something that needs tending to. Because my impulse is always to want so much connection that it can be consuming and take over and not have that separateness.
I also love that we started this being like, what are the rules? How will we share things on Instagram and podcast? A 1, 2, 3. What are the guidelines? And then we're like, how do we exist as people in
relationship? How do I have a relationship with my parents? No.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't really talk about what feels important to me about still wanting to talk about it, parenting and relationship.
Let's talk more about why it feels so important to us to share.
Yeah.
Because someone could be like, well, okay, if this is a difficult thing, why are you even doing it?
I mean, I think for me, we've interviewed Alex. I've talked quite a bit about Alex Wegman and like seeing Alex represent her experience of parenting online. I think when we're talking specifically about parenting with a disability, it's something that is not represented much out in the great wide world. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that. I think that there's a lot of legitimate fear that parents with disabilities feel in sharing their experiences. And part of that is because there is so much stigma and scrutiny put upon disabled parents. You know, I mean, I've said, and it sounds dramatic, and I really don't mean to put any pressure on Alex, but I do feel like seeing Alex as a parent is part of why Otto exists. It was very hard for me to imagine that before seeing it. And so I think that there is some amount of really beautiful power in representing disability and parenthood, and not just the images of it. Although I do think the image of it is important. I think, again, of like Brittany Fisher's account on Instagram, where her account was like, literally, this is how I transfer my son into his car seat, or how I lift him off the ground. Like, your kid is in that video, that your kid is being represented in that. And I think, I don't know what that child will think of that later, but I also do think that there is at least one piece of that that is tangibly, practically doing a lot of good in the world. And then there's the piece of just like trying to narrate the complexities of this particular intersection of experiences in a way that is clarifying for people or empowering to people or helps people feel seen or grounded or connected, not alone. All of that has been incredibly powerful in my life, similarly to how you describe that and how people have come to you. So that's not a little thing to just let go of, or like, as we're thinking about this, it's not just like, here are all the horrible, tricky things that happen with representing parenting and your kid, but it's also like, here are the really wonderful things that can happen for other families, for other parents, for other caregivers and other kids. So it's just a very tricky needle to thread. And I know I have definitely pulled back. In the early days, the container that we created was like, okay, well, we can post photos of Otto if we're also in it with him. And then it was like, more recently, it was like, we don't want his face included in those images. I still don't know how I feel about even including that. I've had a few weird reactions from, most people are lovely, right? Like most people are great and it's not a problem. But then every once in a while, I had this one man email me at one point. He wrote a really long email talking about his experience reading my book. And I wrote a pretty brief response. And then he wrote me back and I didn't respond to the second email. And he wrote me a little bit later this very angry message that was like, I at least want to know updates on Otto and Micah. And then he like quoted a part of my book where I said that I wish that I was sitting at a coffee shop with the reader, like having an in-person conversation or something like that, which I do, like the intimacy of that, right? But the idea that a stranger would feel entitled to updates on my kid. I mean, I think it's maybe it's a similar feeling to being at a playground and somebody recognizes Charlie, where it's like, oh, these mediums that we share in have this sense of such great intimacy. And part of that is because we long for that kind of connection with people. But then there's like a part of it that's like, but you're not entitled to any information about my kid. That feels like a hard boundary. And how do I share in a way that reminds people of that boundary, or that, I don't know. Anyways, now we're circling back to some of those like concrete, tricky pieces.
Yeah, there's the like logistic of it. Like I share like hands and feet and us like doing stuff. But like lately I've been thinking about his hair is just iconic. And I often show the back of his head and I'm like, well, okay, there's no other kid that I have seen in our like local sphere whose hair is like Charlie's. And then sometimes I just like get into these weird spirals about it. But yeah, I think it's a dance between like the actual logistics of it and feeling some of this is just like about like legitimate safety for our kids. And some of it, a lot of it is, I think about the people who will listen to this podcast right now, like Andrew's parents are really integral. They're very much in our care team. And so they come up a lot. Like they're a huge part of our life in ways that like other of my family aren't as just like locationally present, but I think they're going to come up a lot. They already have in episodes and I've already like planned out a little note that I want to send to my mother-in-law just to clarify some stuff that I said, just to be so clear for her. So I'm already thinking about how people in real time are showing up here. But then I think about in like 10 years, Charlie's 14 and he finds us, or in 20 years, he's 24. And
are they going to listen to this?
I don't, God, I kind of hope not. And also part of me is like, I wish that I had a little peek into what my mom's experience, you know?
Oh, like, yeah.
I don't know. So I do think about how he will listen back. And I hope that I do as few fumbles as possible. in all areas of ways that I document our world. I just want him to feel really respected as an entire human person, and that I honor his feelings as an experience in the world as a 4-year-old with the same like care that I would think about my mother-in-law and how these stories might rest for her or like sit with her.
What if in 20 years, Charlie and Otto start a podcast?
Oh my God, wouldn't that be amazing?
What would that podcast be?
Oh dear God. The stories.
Lord. All right. Well,
on that note.
Yes. Everybody just picture that for a second and let yourself tremble. Maybe that makes me tremble. We want to hear from our people about this. It's sticky. It's wobbly. What makes this a hard question for you? Where has it been troubling for you? And also, if you have more clarity about it, or you've figured out the container that you think makes a lot of sense for this, share it on our Patreon. We'll start a conversation over there in response to this episode. We really would love to know your thoughts and feelings, big or small, concrete or wobbly, about this conversation.
Yeah, like the nitty-gritty logistics and also this bigger, I think, juicier conversation of just like, how do we exist in relationship with each other and how do we allow so many things to be true at once? How does that show up for you in your life? When you set aside just like the logistics of safety, this feels like it's really about how do we coexist together and how do we let so many stories be true at the same time?
Ooh, we got into it.
That was great.
Cool.
All right, we'll see you next week.
XOXO.
Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
This podcast is edited and perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.